You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Hi, I'm Holly Randall, and welcome to my podcast, Holly Randall Unfiltered. This is a show about sex, the adult industry, and the people in it. I'm a 21-year veteran of this fascinating little industry, and as the eldest child of the trailblazing erotic photographer Suze Randall, you could say I grew up in it. So forget everything you think you know about porn, because this show is going to change your mind. My guests are some of the biggest names in the industry, and we unabashedly reveal the real behind-the-scenes stories. The funny, the inspiring, the tragic, and the bizarre. Everyone has an opinion about sex work, but few people actually listen to the sex workers. So sit back and prepare yourself for a podcast, which is honest, raw, and unfiltered. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Holly Randall Unfiltered. My guest today is a redheaded, tatted yogi who was on a path to self-discovery before she ever landed in the adult industry. She is one half of the Online Forever podcast, and I am so excited to talk to the beautiful Sydney Summers today.
Yay, I'm so excited to talk to you.
So I do want to get into the origin story, but the Online Forever title is really interesting. Can you tell me kind of like what that means? Does it mean, I guess, what I think it means?
It means what you think it means, although it has morphed in the, you know, we've done the podcast for like a year and it's already changed a lot semantically to us, I think. But yeah, Susie, my co-host, came up with that like long ago. She had sort of a vision for this podcast, mostly because of the first question you get asked a lot when you're in the adult industry is like, how are you sure you want to be online forever? Like, that's what's going to happen to you. And it is what happens to you. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, exploring what that means to different people and how they feel about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, since we're on this train, we may as well start with talking about your podcast. So what made you decide to start one?
You know, being honest, I guess the honest answer is I wanted another route of content to maybe go viral with, but I also am just so grateful now to have the outlet to express myself and have something going on outside of the adult industry, which is, I think, so important to me anyway.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful for it. And yeah, I'm really excited to see where it goes. It's still pretty new, but
yeah,
Susie, like, I think I tweeted something about like, oh, I want to start a podcast. And Susie was like, saw it and messaged me immediately. She was like, I've wanted to do this for a long time. Like, let's go. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Susie
Steller.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, she's my co-host.
Yeah. Okay. Because I want to make sure we get the full name out there. There's a couple Susies out there. So I want to make sure I was thinking of the right same person. So how has your experience with the podcast been so far?
It's been up and down. We had a really weird last year. Had a lot of pit stops along the way, I guess. But this season, we're about to start releasing our third season, and it feels like we are finally starting to get our feet under us and have a bit of the process smoothed out. But yeah, it's a lot more work than people realize. Like one of the, you know, kind of incel-y, weird, lame comments we get a lot is like, oh, like, we should start a podcast. Like as though anyone can just do it, which we're like, yes, anyone can start a podcast and anyone should, but it's not that easy. Like it's way harder than anyone thinks it is.
Yeah.
Especially at first.
Yeah. Because you have to find your rhythm. You have to figure out like what you are. I mean, it's kind of like finding your niche in sex work too, right? Like you can't just.
Immediately.
Yeah. Like you got to kind of feel out what makes sense for you, what your fans respond to. But I think like podcasts are a great avenue for people. It's good for branding, whether or not, you know, it ends up being like monetarily successful. And it's a good opportunity to, you know, get another side of you out there, right? Because performing is great, but it's just that, right? It's performing, you don't really get to say what you think.
Yes.
And it doesn't really give a clue to your personality and
you know, who you are as a person.
Yeah. We talk a lot about how podcasts are strangely more intimate than having sex on camera.
Yeah.
There's something way more intimate and intimidating about it in a way.
Yeah. So tell me, like, what the structure of your podcast is. Is it just the two of you talking? Do you have specific topics? Do you have guests?
We have guests. I think we shine in our interviews, but we've been asked to do a lot more like one-on-one episodes of us just, you know, talking about girly things mm-hmm. and being girls and being silly. Mm-hmm. We're haters a little bit. We like to throw some shade, a little bit okay. of shade here and there is always nice calling people out and whatnot. And yeah, we mostly ask, we've had a lot more comedians on this year. We're kind of getting into, I think we both kind of want some like paranormal people on the podcast. We're both really into the paranormal. So yeah, it's branching out in strange new ways, but it is the unifying principle is kind of the permanency of the internet and like how that impacts people's lives and how people made it on the internet. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now this may be a little bit too early of a question since I'm going on Friday, but who have some of your favorite guests been so far?
Loved Dredd. He was amazing. Yes.
And Marsha got my joke.
Holly's coming on Friday. I'm so excited.
So after I come on, I will be in this list is what I'm saying.
Obviously, the top slot will be filled. Yeah, I'm trying. I'm going to try not to interview you during this interview, which is one of my habits as a podcast guest, I feel like.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Right? But I also love talking about myself. So you're free
save
to
it up,
so.
Save it up.
Okay, so Dredd.
Loved Dredd.
He was, so I will say, I've had Dredd on as well, and men typically do not perform well on my podcast,
no.
like, at all, because my audience is 96% men, and they want to hear from the women, like, they almost, like, guys just tend to hang. I still have them on, because I think it's important to have a different perspective, but numbers-wise, mm-hmm. like, people are generally not interested in them.
That's so interesting.
Dredd was one of my most popular interviews.
Oh, people want to know.
People are obsessed with him.
Yeah.
He, like, completely – he's a total exception to the rule.
Yes.
Like, people understandably love Dredd.
I mean, he has the whole package in every sense of the word, for
and
sure.
And he's so lovely.
And humble. And
nice and well-spoken.
Yes.
And, like –
great storyteller.
Yeah. Like, he's great.
Yeah. He's really, like, great. Funky guy.
Yeah.
So yes, we love Dredd. We love the comedians we've had on. We just had on Che Dorena. I don't know if you know him.
Mm-mm.
He was a great interview. That's coming out probably our first interview of this new season. And who else? I'm trying to think of other performers. Kira Noir was amazing.
She's amazing. She's coming back to the podcast actually end
love.
Of this month.
I will be watching that.
I had her on, but that was a long time ago. So
mm-hmm. She probably has lots more to say.
Yes. It's been many years since she's been on, so.
And we had Lena Paul on, and she's also just like
the
best.
Oh, she's great. She's so smart and
I know.
So well educated and has really interesting viewpoints. Yeah, I've had her on twice as well, and both of them were killer episodes.
Yes. And she announced her pregnancy on our episode, which was so fun.
I didn't know she was pregnant.
She had the baby.
Oh my god.
The baby is here. He's amazing.
Oh my god. Yeah. I'll have to text her. That's so great. She's going to be a good mom.
I know. She's like, this shit is easy. She's like, everyone tells me it's hard. No. She's like, I got it in the bag. I'm like, I love that for you.
Having a baby?
Yeah.
Wait till it's a toddler.
You just.
My daughter's three. The storm is coming, Lena. So those are like some really impressive guests.
Yeah, we've had some good folks and yeah. Can't wait to have more.
Really exciting. What has been one of the like best things about your podcast, like for you, like personally?
I think that podcasting is one of several like routes of performance in my life that have really helped me process the like this is such an intense way to put it, but like the self-hatred of performance. Like, I don't know if you experienced that, but it like I've always had that, especially it was worse when I was younger. When I did like a lot of improv when I was a kid, and after the show, like the whole troupe would just like, we really felt bad about ourselves if like the show was bad or something like mm-hmm. that, instead of just like leaving it in the past and moving mm-hmm. on. And the podcast, like listening to yourself back over and over again and like growing as a person while you're setting yourself in stone in this recording that people can listen to for mm-hmm. years, like I think it can be hard, but it's a great lesson in accepting your past self and mm-hmm. being forgiving towards her and loving her too, even though maybe you're different from her.
Yeah, I definitely read comments left on, you know, episodes I did 6 years ago. And I'm just like, and I'm like still offended, even though like that doesn't apply anymore, because I know I've grown and improved as an interviewer since then. Mm-hmm. But I'm still like, still get mad.
And that negativity bias of reading the shitty comments and then those ones standing out is so annoying.
Yeah.
It's so annoying. It's so good to process that stuff, but it's hard. It's a lot of work.
You can also just get to a point in your life where I am generally where I just don't read the motherfucking comments. So you can say whatever you want. I don't care. It's not actually true. I read some of them, but a lot of them I don't read. So there you go. So, all right. So let's rewind and let's go back to the beginning. So normally I start with, you know, questions of how my guest got into the adult industry, but you did some things before getting into the industry that I want to get into first because they're so interesting.
So random.
Starting with your time in wilderness camps.
Yes.
How did you get into that and what was that like?
So I started as a field guide for wilderness therapy programs when I was 24. It was kind of my get out of my home state card. Mm-hmm. I knew a few people who had done it, and I knew that it was a way to go live outside basically full time, which was very appealing to me. And, you know, they say in those programs, a lot of the people that are called to teach at them have a lot of work they need to do on themselves and are attracted to these therapy programs because they're benefiting from them too, which is so true. And yeah, I worked at a program that I thought was very lovely and was very beneficial for the kids there. But obviously the industry has caught a lot of flack, especially recently. I think Paris Hilton's documentary was a big, really amplified like the voices of people who have been really harmed by some of the camps because it's a really deregulated industry, which is a big issue, obviously, because you're holding minors at like camps. Like, I don't know. It should be more regulated, but I loved the program I worked for. It's a program where they really emphasized natural consequences as opposed to programs that are what's called behavioral modification. So at those programs, they do like rewards and punishments for different behaviors that the kids do. But at our program, they were really strong about basically letting the kids behave how they want and then letting the natural consequences of the group and of being outside all the time like kind of handle the rewards and punishments instead of like taking that on yourself. And that was very interesting for me because I wasn't really raised like that, you know? So it was really cool to see how that sense of responsibility was really just instilled in these kids. And it made them really want to be good people intrinsically instead of like forcing them to act a certain way.
So like, how do you mean?
So like say that, so the program kind of works like, most days you're hiking to like a new spot. It's a nomadic program. There's not like a home base. So say you leave camp really late one day because a kid is like, doesn't want to hike. They're like throwing a tantrum and they're like, I'm not hiking today. So then the whole group gets to camp like hours late, maybe in the middle of the night when you're not supposed to get there. Maybe you can't find your food because of that. And then everyone's like kind of mad at this kid because they're like, you could have just cooperated, but
instead you're just going to fucking leave him there. I mean, that's a natural consequence. Bye. What happened to Amanda? She got eaten by a mountain lion. Natural consequence. I left her behind.
She had it coming.
She had it coming, you know? Nature, what can you do?
But yeah, and you know, nature, they say that nature is like 90% of the program. So that takes a lot of the responsibility off the staff to like be this perfect person. It's like you just need to like show up, be the best that you can be, and like being outside and being in this peaceful place and being kind of forced to reflect on yourself when you don't have all these like distractions of everyday life. Like it's just, it was so good for the kids. Like it was such a rewarding job, like really the most rewarding job I think I've ever had, where you just see people change so quickly.
Yeah.
And like really become a part of a community.
Yeah. Cool. That's really great.
Yeah.
Do you have any like crazy stories from that camp?
Oh yeah, definitely. For sure. Yeah, so, oh God. Definitely, like, I had, like, one student that stands out as, like, for sure the wildest. It was, like, one of my very last shifts. And she, like, came in guns blazing. It was a kid who had been to like more than 10 programs before this, like really struggled and had not found one that had been helpful. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of at the point where you're like, why do her parents keep sending her to camps at this point? Mm-hmm. Like, but she seemed to change a lot during our program. That being said, this story kind of negates that a little bit. But when she showed up, she definitely like weaponized her bloody tampon, which was a new one for me. She like took it out, threw it at staff, like, that was wild. I was like, oh my God. And she like calmed down a lot during the course of her stay. But this is so insane. Okay, so we get like fresh food once or twice a week. I can't remember how often.
Fuck, dude, I know where this is going.
You know where it's going. But did you know that it's a jalapeno? It's not a cucumber. It's not a carrot. It's a jalapeno. So yeah, basically this kid used this jalapeno to masturbate and the staff found out about it and they were like,
wait, no, that's not where I thought it was going.
Where you thought it was going? I thought that's where it went.
Okay, sorry. Let me not try to predict what you're going to say. Tell your story because that is not.
So that happened once and then we were like, don't do that. And then
Hold on. Okay, because I was picturing like she was putting tampons in the food. That's where I thought you were going, but clearly no, you were not going there at all. So fresh food, she decides to masturbate with a jalapeno.
Yeah, and we were like, don't.
Did she like put it, like how did you know?
I know because she told one of the other students and the students told us because they were like, this sounds dangerous. And we were like, that is probably dangerous.
Did she put it like back in the food?
So you all get like your own fresh produce and you like keep it in your backpack, right? And you can like eat it throughout the week if you save it, or you can eat it all at once. You know, it's kind of your
decision.
And then
starve consequences. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. But yeah, she used it to masturbate again after that. Like it was like she was about to leave the program and I think she was like maybe acting out a little bit, like was nervous, but it broke inside of her. This was on my shift. We were supposed to do this really cool hike that day where we were going to these like ruins and instead we had to like wait for a douche to be delivered to our group in the middle of the desert because she was like freaking out. Like there were seeds inside of her. It was insane. Truly insane.
God, we talk about like spicy content. You know, like when we want to say that like something's on your OnlyFans, but you can't say OnlyFans because you're on fucking Instagram. You're like, check out my spicy page with a jalapeno. Like that girl literally was very literal about that.
Oh my God. I had this awesome shift. It was like, it was the adult group, which they're still really young. They're just over 18. But it was all girls. And like, I think like a couple days in, we all realized that everyone in the group was like either gay or bisexual. And I didn't know this till after my shift, but all of the girls were like hooking up at night. I was like, guys, you weren't supposed to be doing that. That's bad. But also, I would have done the same thing at your age.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, what a year.
That jalapeno story was, I did not, that was not what I thought.
No one saw that one coming.
Wow. So after that, you ended up spending some time at a monastery. Is that right?
Yes. Actually, like right after that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So like, tell me how that came to be.
So yeah, I was definitely on my, you know, my own journey during that time. And I was reading a lot of like self-help books and a lot about Buddhism and stuff. And I read this book written by a monk who had a monastery in Spokane, Washington. And I was like, oh, I didn't know there were like monasteries in the mm-hmm. States. I thought they were all like, you know, in Asia or something. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I guess you can just go live in a monastery. And then that idea like really embedded itself in my head. So I went after Utah, I went up to Washington, like right off the coast and worked at this resort there for a while, teaching yoga. It was so fun. And then I got enough money to go stay at this monastery in Oregon for a while. And it was awesome. I've been back a few times since. And I brought that up in when you were like, is there anything you want to talk about? Because I've been like processing a lot of, I think, the behaviors and, you know, like coping mechanisms I picked up during the pandemic. And I realized, I was like, I think I would literally be a monk right now if it weren't for the pandemic happening, which is so funny to me because now I do porn. Just like the opposite.
It's kind of the opposite. Right? Yeah. So tell me a little bit about this monastery. Tell us about like what your day-to-day routine was like.
Okay. So you're quiet till noon. No one talks, which I loved so much. You wake up really early, like 4:35, go to the Zendo, which is the like chapel basically of the monastery. It's like this beautiful room. Everyone's quiet. You meditate for like 2 straight hours in the morning. Just sit there. You don't move. No one moves.
Do you get to eat? Do you get to eat first? What about coffee? Do they have coffee?
Okay, I always got coffee first because you're not allowed to yawn. You're not allowed to fall asleep. And, you know, it kind of...
You're not allowed to yawn. You kind of can't really stop yawning. Like, yawning happens.
The older monks, like, I would see it almost happen to them sometimes, but then they, like, swallow it. They'd be like... And I was like, okay, I guess... It's like... It's just an old tradition, but I guess it's like rude to yawn. And I'm like, okay.
I get that. And also it's contagious.
Right? But I'm like, it is 4 a.m. So.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, I would have some like tea before so I could wake up a little bit. Because it sucks when you like want to meditate for a long period of time. And then the whole time you're just like thinking about other stuff. Like it's nice to have a little caffeine so you can at least give it your best shot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, then we would do chores. And the chores could be anything from like cleaning to working in the garden, and then we would eat lunch and we could talk, and then we would do more chores, and then we would go to like a lecture or something, and then meditate more in the evening, go to sleep at like 10. So not a lot of sleep. You got to get a nap in there during the day. I did. And then there's like a silent retreat once a month at this place, so there's like a week of every month where you're like totally quiet. And it's not just that you're quiet. I didn't know this, but they like put paper over all the mirrors, all the clocks. You couldn't make eye contact with anyone. So you're like totally in your own zone, like all the way in your own head.
The eye contact thing is a little bit weird to
me. It's strange,
the clocks,
right?
And the mirrors, I get.
The eye contact, I guess, is like you're just like, I know that it's like silence is like speaking, but you still, I feel like, communicate with other people with your eyes, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe that's part of it. I'm not sure, but
yeah. So what, I mean, obviously you really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
What about that appealed to you?
You know, I am so drawn towards like simplicity, and I feel like this part of me I've like finally come to terms with, but I've always just like wanted to be a person that existed like 100,000 years ago, like a monkey, like not in this modern day society. And I've like, I feel like I've finally, yeah, come to terms with the fact that I live in 2024 and there's nothing I can really do about that. But who knows? Maybe it's like a past life. Maybe it's just some weird personality trait of mine. But I don't know. And I've always been drawn to like a non-traditional lifestyles. So yeah, I loved being there. It was like one of my first experiences where I didn't feel like I had to be like the funniest person or the smartest person in the room. Like everyone's just there to like better themselves and be spiritual and relax and learn stuff. So it was just a beautiful environment. It was a great community. Like it's really hard to find community, I think, in this day and age. And it was like everyone there's there for the same purpose. You're like all on the same schedule, and
yeah
it's really beautiful.
Interesting. So what are your views on like religion and spirituality and God? I mean, do you believe in a God?
I definitely believe in a higher power. I think that religion is kind of like a weirdly bastardized like human way of trying to understand something that is extremely mysterious by nature. And I think anyone who claims to know what that great mystery is or what its name is, I'm just like skeptical of a bit. So maybe the institution of religion I find kind of suspicious. But I am really spiritual, and I think that all religions have a kernel of like really beautiful spirituality to them. It's just they can get a little weird when humans try to like act like they know what's going on, you know,
and use them to control other people.
Exactly.
And like benefit themselves.
Yeah,
which we see a lot of.
Yes.
So how do you incorporate spirituality into your day-to-day life?
I really try to mimic a lot of like the monastery in my day-to-day life. Like I live alone, and I love my solitude, and I love journaling, and I still meditate a lot, and just I really want to have like a very clear mind that is able to like receive big ideas and big messages, you know. And it's really hard to do that when you work in social media primarily, because I feel like social media really it's just very cluttering.
Yeah, internally. It's a lot of noise.
Yes, exactly. So constantly trying to seek that balance, because I definitely, I mean, I love dopamine as much as the next person. I love a good scroll, and I find it so addictive, and I really try to like minimize that in my life, sometimes successfully, sometimes less so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting new challenge that we face.
Yeah.
You know, because before, you know, the worst thing that you could do was like watch a lot of TV, but even then you'd have to be home to do that. You'd have to be present in the world when you were out in your car or out at the streets or at the grocery store. And now it's like you can be disconnected from the world at all times.
So true.
Especially if you get the new fucking Apple.
The Apple
Vision. The Apple Vision glass. No, the Apple Vision glasses.
Oh my God, yes.
With the battery pack, which, yes, by the way, I tried out a couple of days. I had it at our office. And you can literally walk around with that thing because, you know, it's AR. You can see, and you can like not, be in this world at all. Like you can walk around, you can see things, right? So you won't run into shit, but you can also have like your desktop up here and like a movie playing here. Like you can be fully disconnected from reality.
Permaman cave. That's insane. Yeah, I had this therapist say something really interesting to me once because we were talking about how phones are like portals essentially. And she said something like, oh yeah, the magician never wants to get lost in his own portal. And I was like, oh, that's such an interesting way to think about phones.
Yeah.
You know?
And working in social media.
Yeah. And carrying it around all the time. And
Yeah, don't get high on your own supply.
Uh-huh.
We all know Adam and Eve is the one-stop shop for everything sexy. And now, with my code HOLLY, you can get any one item for 50% off, plus 10 free gifts. And you'll even get free shipping. So spice up your sex life at adamandeve.com, but only if you use code HOLLY.
How did all of this self-exploration, spirituality lead you into getting into porn?
So after the monastery, it was my first time my bank account was in the negatives. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to take a little trip back home and make some money. And then my plan was to go travel again and go become a monk, basically. So I went back home and my friend, I kept trying to find a job. And I had this job at a bakery. It was like so bad. I wasn't making any money and I was living with my mom. And I was just like, why did I come back home? And then my friend showed me how much she was making at the strip club. And I was like, holy shit, I should do this for a little bit and make some money and then go off and do whatever I want. And yeah, I was pretty good at stripping. I like became the top earner at this club, which was awesome.
So you mentioned before that you were teaching yoga. So obviously you had like, you know, body awareness. And you're like a contortionist, right?
Yes. So a baby contortionist, yes.
So you were a baby contortionist.
Yes, it's a new adventure in my life, yeah.
Okay. But was that, did you have that before you went into the strip club or?
Yes, I did have like a really good yoga foundation, and obviously being flexible is very sexual to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So that was really helpful. And I've been on stage for forever, so I was pretty comfortable like dancing and stuff like that. The whole sales mentality was new to me, but I read some like how to be a stripper like articles, and I was like, okay, I think I could get this. And and then the pandemic happened, so I was all the clubs shut down. Mm-hmm. And then I had just made my OnlyFans, so that was sort of the segue. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So tell us about your journey into actually like doing scenes with people.
So do you know Emma Magnolia?
Of course. We've had her on this show.
Yes. So we kind of were like intense coming up together buddies in porn back in Arkansas, where we're from. So we were like always living right next to each other, and we just got into it together, which was so nice to like have a close friend, mm-hmm. you know, instead of having to figure it all out by yourself. But yeah, she was the stripper who showed me
Okay.
Yes. So,
Emma.
Yes. So,
who was stripping so that she could support her nonprofit,
which I also worked for.
Narcan.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. So, I was like delivering the needles with her and stripping, and yeah.
See, everybody, it is a true story.
It's a true story.
I've had people be like, "This is not true. People aren't that wonderful."
Well, that would be such a weird story to make up.
It would be, but it wouldn't be probably the first.
Yeah,
but. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I'm here to verify. But yeah, so yeah, we started doing OnlyFans together and just figuring out all the marketing. And I had not been on social media for like years before that. So that was weird to like get back on and suddenly mm-hmm. become like kind of dependent on it. And mm-hmm. yeah.
And so your first scene was with her, I assume?
My first scene was with her, yeah. It was like I was a student in her class, and I was always kind of baby, and Emma was more kind of like mommy-dommy situation. Uh-huh. That was sort of our dynamic back then. Uh-huh. And I was like passing notes in this class, and she had to punish me. Yeah, that was my first ever technical scene.
And I assume like you knew you liked girls before that happened?
Yeah, for sure. Always liked girls.
So you always knew.
Yeah. It
wasn't like a discovery moment.
Yeah.
Do you consider yourself bi or do you like,
yeah,
like do you, or do you have a preference on whether or not you date men or women, or are you kind of pansexual?
Yeah. Kind of pansexual is accurate. Like I definitely have the whole bi girl, like bipolar thing where it's like reactionary sexuality almost, like, oh, this man broke my heart. I hate men now. Now I have to like date women, and then women break my heart, and then blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. I'm kind of on men right now. Like, they're being bastards, as always, so I'm also, like, oh, I want to date a girl again, too, but I also kind of, like, want to be a housewife with a husband and baby, so I don't know what the fuck is going on, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, what's the wonderful journey we call life? So, you've had some porn injuries. Is that right?
Yeah.
Just tell us about what happened. We love a good, scary story.
It was pretty scary. Yeah, so my second scene I did with Brazzers was like a threesome that filmed so late into the night. Everyone was just getting uncoordinated and tired and mooky, you know. And yeah, the guy in the scene, Van Wild, he was like holding, okay, it was him and Demi Sutra.
Mm.
He was holding her hands while he was like fucking her doggy style while she was eating me out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're visualizing this. And he kind of like, I guess, just pumped a little too hard, reared back a little too much, and Demi came up like at least a foot and then like fully dropped down teeth first like into my pussy. It was so scary. And I did like, it was like a guy getting kicked in the balls. I was like, ugh, and just like rolled over. Like while we were filming, I was like, no, 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 this is not happening. There was blood. There was blood and literal hair in Demi's teeth. Like it was so fucked up. The director was like, God damn it. Because it was like almost midnight at this point. Like
yeah.
We were just trying to get it over with.
Yeah, yeah. I've been there.
But yeah, it was really crazy because like after we stopped the bleeding, there was a little cut. It was kind of in my pube. So we were like, okay, we can keep going. But the next day was like basically healed. It was like the pussy juice just magical potion.
That is a unique injury. I have not experienced anything specifically that.
I would not wish it on anyone.
I've had like, you know, the ones where like you'd bend the dick the wrong way or break the bed or accidentally go in the wrong hole. Those are fun. But yeah, that's a very unique porn injury.
Bent dicks are just... I hope that never happens anywhere near me.
Yeah.
I don't like the sound of that.
No. No. I can't imagine what that would be like.
And it can be permanent, you know? It can cause permanent
damage. I know guys that have, like, broken their dick.
For real, for real.
Yeah, for real. You have mentioned before that you were addicted to anal clean-out.
I have mentioned this.
Can you explain this to us?
I'm kind of off the sauce at the moment. Oh, I haven't even mentioned this, but I did move this weekend, actually. I actually showed up for this podcast like 2 hours early. I've like been in the valley for a minute because my brain is just like super scattered right now. But anyway, I say this because I don't have my anal douche at my new house yet. So I'm not anal douching at the moment.
Okay.
But if I'm with a guy who likes anal, I love for it to be clean. What can I say? And I want it to happen all the time. I don't know why I do this weird thing where I like douche, but I don't tell them. And I just hope when we hang out that we have anal. But I'm not like, you know what I mean? I'm not like douching and then being like, my ass is clean. Let's do it. I'm just like, what if my ass was mysteriously clean and we just happened to have
anal? What if I was just ready for anal?
All the time.
I remember like, okay, this is kind of a random aside, but you know, like Kirsten Price and Kieran Lee, they've been married forever, right?
Okay.
I remember when they like first started dating. She filled in for me last minute for somebody, and I forget how it came up, but it was something like she was already shaved and ready to go. And I was like, damn, are you like,
how?
You're always like this? And she was like, yeah, I like always, basically, she's like, I always like to be like ready for Kieran. And I was like,
wow.
Who does that?
Wow.
I'm like,
dream woman, robot woman.
Yeah, I know. I was like, damn. Karen, you got very lucky. You have a lovely wife. Only she can put up with your bullshit. We love you. You know we do.
I think it does speak to kind of the... It is lovely to have a hygiene routine with porn. Like, that's mm-hmm. one of the greatest parts of the industry, of being in the sex industry in general to me. I was not the most hygienic girl before I became a stripper. And then I was forced to be, and I was like, I get it now. I kind of like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you learn so much about your own body.
Yes, for real.
Which is, you know, really, I mean, it's a very educational journey.
Indeed.
And you learn that, like, what works for you may not work for somebody else. You mm-hmm. know, it's like there's no, like, one blanket statement where it's like, okay, this is, like... That's why I'm always kind of cautionary about doing a kind of PSA when I'm like, girls, this is how you should clean out your vagina or your mm-hmm. butt, because it's different for every girl. And what yes. works for one girl can give another girl a yeast infection.
Yes.
And it's like, you just got to like try the different things and see what makes sense for you.
Yeah. Anal prep is so individualized, but I love hearing about people's routines. I'm like, what do you do? How do you do it?
I will say, like, I get colonics from time to time, oh, not so often anymore, but they are. Awesome. It's the most uncomfortable 45 minutes of your life.
What's uncomfortable about it? The physical sensation?
Yes. Uh-huh. That they're like pumping all this water up your colon. It's awful. I hate it.
Oh, God. I want it. I want
it. Like,
I've never had one.
Oh, you haven't?
But I want. I have my shower enema.
Okay.
But I want to try a colonic. Yes.
No, you got to do the colonic. Yeah. Because they're like, I mean.
All the way up in there.
Yeah, it's terrible. Ugh. It's awful. They basically like have you. You and you kind of like let them know, like you go for as long as you can, then you let them know when you need them.
You're tapping out?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Basically, you tap out. Yeah. It's like, it's horrible. But they like get
small.
Literally, that's like up there.
You're yeah.
Like, what the fuck? It's not, and they can like look at it and tell you like if you're, what you're eating, like if you drink enough, like if you drink too much alcohol. Like, it's bizarre. Like, they just, it's like. It's like tea leaves. They like read your shit, like coming.
Oh my God, I love
tube
that.
And, like, somehow, like, know everything about you. It's really bizarre.
Wow, I feel like I would be great at that job, honestly. I feel like I would enjoy that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to, like, it's one of those things where it's so uncomfortable for the person at the time. So you have to, like, make
soothe
good at small talk.
Mm.
And then you, like, massage their stomach. And then you also, like, take a magic wand to, like, their legs. Because it's something, yeah, it's like you want to like massage the legs because that helps.
Relaxes
like,
or something?
Yeah, I don't know. It helps it like go through. I don't know.
They oh just my God.
Fucking magic wand to your legs. I know, it's very bizarre.
Oh, I love that.
But it's great. It's great. So with your Zen yoga, wilderness background and all of this, do you feel like you've carved out a niche of fans that are specifically into like those facets of your personality? Like, what is your like online porn persona, I guess?
Oh, that's a really good question. Like, I feel like there is, like, a niche of women in the industry who... We just interviewed Indica Flower, you know mm-hmm. her? Mm-hmm. Like, she reminds me of that, of, like, people who just kind of have that healing energy, have, like... And they say, like, people who have had, like, intense experiences in childhood, even though it's painful, they become, like, the best healers. And I do think that men are really drawn to that. Men in particular, like... love that sort of maternal, caring, like, I understand you, empathy, sort of a... Bless shit. You.
Sorry.
You were trying so hard.
Sorry, it's allergies, people.
It's big allergy time here.
Okay,
go on. Yeah, yeah. I definitely think that is an appeal to my fans, and I think that I fuck in a very, like, almost maternal way, you know? I, like, am a caretaker. Yeah, so I'm sure that is somewhat of the appeal. But also, it's just like, I love this weird connection between flexibility and sexuality. Like, it shouldn't necessarily be inherently sexual. It's kind of like wrong that it's sexual almost mm-hmm. because before I started doing sex work, I was like, I will never sexualize. Or when I started, sorry. When I first started doing sex work, I was like, I'll never sexualize yoga. And here I am today, like, very much sexualizing yoga.
Of course.
Right?
You can't, like, have those moves and not be able to, like, come on.
Exploit them a little bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, of course, there's, like, boundaries that exist, I suppose, somewhere in there. And my spiritual life is not completely overlaid with my sexuality and my life online. But, yeah, there's definitely a lot of overlap, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What has surprised you the most about the adult industry?
What has surprised me the most? I think I'm kind of at a weird point with porn, I think it's been like 4 years now since I started. And I feel like I think I've been surprised by how much easier it is for me to be like slutty and really enjoy filming when I have like a stable partnership in my life, which is kind of ironic, I guess. But I find I'm just such a romantic, and I find it easier, I think, to experience that sort of vulnerability with people when I know that I have someone who, like, you know, supports me and loves me and cares for me back at home, kind of. So it's a little harder for me to do porn when I'm single, which I've found surprising, for sure.
Do you think that there's, like, some kind of deep intrinsic fear that if you meet somebody, because it's hard to meet somebody who accepts someone who does sex work, right? Mm-hmm. So do you think that there's some fear in there that, you know, by doing this, like, if I meet somebody that and they find out what I do, or, you know, they see what I do, that they won't love me?
Yeah, there. That's definitely a part of it. That's an element of it, which I would never be with someone who couldn't accept what I do for work, right, ever. But at the same time, like, it definitely limits your dating pool in a lot of ways, which I don't think is a bad thing. Like, I think it's good to be with someone who is comfortable enough with sex work and that part of you to be able to accept it. But it's still scary and can cause a lot of fear. Yeah, dating and knowing that can really put a lot of people off, and it's scary to be vulnerable about that with new people.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, I, as some of you, most of you know, I have an OnlyFans, and even though I'm very tame on it and all I do is like softcore nudes, I don't think that I would do that if I wasn't currently like with my husband, because like, when it's funny, because when you talked about the name of your podcast being Online Forever, the reason that I even started modeling nude was because I accidentally leaked nudes of me on my website. It's my fault. I talked about it in another episode. I won't go into it, but I didn't give her the correct instructions.
We'll put it that way. Oh my God.
So when those came out, I realized immediately, well, Online Forever, like, I can't take this back. There's no, like, backpedaling on this. So I just, like, doubled down on it. I'm like, well, fuck it.
Fuck,
like,
it. Oh, my God.
I'll just make money on it.
Uh-huh.
And I was with my now husband was my boyfriend at the time. And, you know, I asked him, like, how he felt about it. And he didn't care. He said it was fine. And then when I decided to shoot more nudes, he was totally behind it and very supportive, and actually shot a lot of my first nudes for me. But I don't think I would have probably followed that path if I hadn't been with him. You know, I've been with somebody who I felt like I was going to be with for the rest of my life, and that supported me. I think the same thing, if I had been single, I would have been very concerned about what that would have made a prospective mate think of me, and would that have limited, you know, my ability to have like a relationship.
Yeah, and I feel like there's this narrative that is in part, like, I don't know how true it is, but it feels true at times, that, like, you're giving part of yourself away or something like that when you do sexual things online. And it is just really nice mentally to have that stable home base where you can, like, fill your cup back up and feel like you're not just sending it all out into the ether, you know? Like, I love my online community of people, but at the same time, like, they can't cuddle me at night, you know? So
yeah. 100. I mean, and you also want to feel supported in whatever you're doing in your life, right? And especially something that stigmatizes sex work. I mean, that's, you know, that's a tough nut to crack, and there's a lot of, like, guys who are wonderful guys who just, like, can't
get behind that
for whatever reason, and that's fine. You know, so it is difficult to find somebody who's okay with that, that, like, you actually want to date.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So I saw a tweet of yours about having your socials deleted on the same day a year prior, and you were listing lessons you learned, including every opportunity that I thought would be my big break turned out to be a very small step, especially compared with the steady gains made from cultivating consistency and authenticity. What were those big breaks that didn't end up panning out like you thought they would?
Well, a couple things come to mind. So one was honestly doing pro porn. Like, I've done a couple scenes with Brazzers, and I was like, oh, I'm so honored. Like, I'm with Brazzers now. And doing a couple scenes, at least, like, it didn't really impact my career in a big way at all. Like, I could be wrong about this, but it feels like to really take advantage of porn, you have to absolutely like grind for a while and mm-hmm. really do a lot of scenes.
No pun intended.
Gotta grind it out. And I also have gone on some male-led podcasts, which I don't regret. I feel like I've learned from, but you know, I see a lot of people going on, like, have you heard of the Whatever podcast?
Oh, yeah. I hate to even say. For some reason, that has come up, like, in the last couple of episodes, and it's never come up before.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. They go viral a lot, which is so aggravating to me. But yeah, like, doing these, like, incel podcasts, basically, even doing, like, things like No Jumper, it just had no impact on my career positively at all. Like, those men are not. They're not interested in girls who look like me, I don't think. If they are, they're, like, can be really hateful, I find. Mm. And so looking back, it's just like, oh, I thought that this would have such a positive impact on my career and my, like, income, and it just really didn't.
Mm-hmm.
The things that have helped my career the most have been being consistent on TikTok and really, like, working on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so.
Well, now that you've been on Holly Randall Unfiltered, prepare for everything to
blast
just blow up! Your life's gonna change.
My big break is here.
Please, everybody, go visit her profile so that is true. Make me look good. Come on.
Holly's that guy. You know? She's the gateway.
I am, yes. Definitely. I wish, man. That's why they call me Ho Rogan.
Okay. Ho Rogan Unfiltered. Yes, I'm much great. I'm glad to be doing this podcast and not an incel male-led podcast by someone who has nothing to do with the sex industry but is profiting from it. I just hate that shit.
From like a negative.
Yeah, from bashing girls. I'm just like, this sucks.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, everybody gets to have their say, I guess, right? You know,
yes, they
that's
do.
That's the American way. That's the American way. You can say whatever you want. I know what you mean. I've been through the same thing where I'm like, this is the next big thing that's going to make a difference. This is the next big thing. And then it isn't.
No. You have to do little things constantly. You have to go viral all the time. Like, it's really, it's, yeah, that has also been a big surprise about the industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how have those disappointments shaped how you approach your career?
I'm trying to think. Like, about 2 years ago, I started a new OnlyFans because I didn't know if I was going to do this long term or not. I was kind of one foot in, one foot out.
Right.
And so my focus was really on making money instead of on building like a brand that I love. And so, yeah, I made a new page like 2 years ago and have really just focused on being as authentic as possible so I don't have to lead some double life because I find that exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And on like long term sustainability. And what else was I going to say?
How did you like, so you said you made a new page. Like, what was different about this?
I had a management company take over my old page and it just completely tanked my page.
Mm.
And so I just created a new one where I was like, the old page is scrapped. Mm-hmm. The new one is me. It's all run by me.
Mm-hmm.
And I started working really hard on figuring out TikTok at that time as well. Mm-hmm. So that's where most of my fans had come from.
How do you know that, by the way? I'm just curious because I obviously have a TikTok as well. And I don't know, like, I don't know if it helps me or not. It's hard to, like, I don't know, like, I should know this, but I don't know where my traffic comes from.
They used to have a statistic thing on OnlyFans where you could see where your clicks were coming from every day, which it has disappeared. I don't know where it is now. I know that only because...
But we can't link directly to OnlyFans from TikTok. So, like,
how did they know?
How do you know?
That one I knew because my TikTok linked to a specific Instagram. So it was coming from that Instagram.
Oh, okay,
that
gotcha. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
But I know that most of my fans come from TikTok because when I would go viral on TikTok, like, I would have this huge surplus of fans all of a sudden. And then, you know, a month later when their subscription renews, like, those people who are still there, I know that they came from that.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah. So.
So you can see, like, the jump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And TikTok has been the social media platform that has grown for me, like, the quickest over the last couple of years, too, and has built up my other socials. But. Oh my God, what was your original question?
How are those disappointments shaped how you approach your career?
Yes. So yeah, just focusing more on doing, I was going to say, I don't run any advertisements anywhere either. I used to do like a lot of promo and myself for myself and selling it. And I just nixed all of that. I'm like, I just want things to be pure. I want it to be me. And I
want it to be organic.
Organic and sustainable. Like really accepting that you don't have to be growing as a business 100,000% of the time. Like you can have periods where you are relaxing and sustaining instead of like constantly getting bigger every month. Like it's okay. So yeah, that has been really good for my mental health and longevity. And
yeah,
I like running my business that way.
Yeah. It's kind of like this race that we get into, like constantly be growing, constantly be getting bigger.
And it's addicting. Like, it becomes a game. Yeah. Like over the pandemic, like I was making so much money and it just became kind of a game to me almost. It was a very surreal experience looking back, and I'm glad not to be in that mindset anymore. It was pretty alienating in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know?
And exhausting.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Definitely. Definitely.
Well, Sydney, thank you so much for coming on. I do have a couple of questions for you from my Patreon members that we're going to get to in a separate segment.
Okay.
That's okay with you. Can you tell everybody online where they can find you?
Yes. SydneySummers.com. It's SIDNEYSummers.com. You can find everything there. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And Online Forever Podcast on there too.
Yeah. Yes. Make sure you go and visit her links and tell her I sent you so she thinks my podcast is bigger than all the rest of them.
Yes. And then come watch Holly on our podcast. It's going to be fucking awesome.
Yes. Clearly. Just kidding. And you guys can find me at Holly Randall on Instagram and on Twitter. Of course, go to patreon.com/HollyRandallUnfiltered to watch these episodes streamed live. And, you know, if you're watching this on YouTube, please like and subscribe. Thank you guys so much for being here, and I'll see you next week. Thank you so much for listening. Your support means the world to me. A great way to show your love is to rate and review my show, and an easy way to do that is to go to ratethispodcast.com/HRU, and you'll be directed to the various podcast apps your device supports, and then led to where you can leave your review. And if you can afford to financially support this podcast, you can do so for as little as $5 a month at patreon.com/HollyRandallUnfiltered. This is where you'll get access to the live streams of my interviews, bonus Q&As with my guests, access to my fine art photography and behind the scenes of my shoots, free memberships to my Not Safe for Work website, hollyrandall.com, merchandise such as stickers, mugs, and hoodies, and so much more. You can watch the video versions of these podcasts at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/HollyRandallUnfiltered. Join us every Sunday evening for episode premieres where you can chat live with myself and other HRU fans as we watch the newest release together. You can also follow the show on Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. All of my social media links are at hollylinks.com.